feels pretty amazing in here. I'm not sure if I really want to talk. Are there any questions? Sorry, were you about to ask a question, or were you just... Okay, that was cool. Whitney was like... And then this other voice came. Yes.
Spaced outness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it can definitely be aversion, or like avoidance of some kind. But it seems like sometimes it can be a kind of reprogramming phase. Is that possible?
Yeah, could y'all hear the question? She said about spaced outness. I'm just first of all curious if this is a theme for anyone else today. Just by chance. Today, spaced outness.
Today.
Okay. She said, I know it, spaced outness can be aversion, but sometimes it also seems like it could be a phase of reprogramming. So I would just agree, like, there can be a way that the usual mode, dependent so much on thinking and thinking that we know what's happening, gets kind of frozen or goes on hold. Not that we do it on purpose from the same place, but it gets on hold. And that maybe is more often the case when it's not just reprogramming, like, let's instead of connecting this wire here and put it over here, it just kind of goes into a deeper dimension where it's not wiring. There's more of a spreading out of options. It doesn't need to be that is then like the ultimate range of options and the ultimate fluidity and flexibility. That might be another kind of equipment or hardware that then melts into another time, mm-hmm. that the mind is kind of like the deer in the headlights feeling. Any other question?
Yeah, Jaya.
Yes,
can I ask? One or two things that you clarified from from your previous talk. You used the term reflexes, I think, to refer to habitual tendencies, something like that.
No.
No.
No. Good question. Good. So there's the physical reflexes that they're not actually, it's not like a habit that we, by reinforcing, put in that wire. It's a potential that if the conditions are right, it flowers and then gets integrated and is available for when it needs to be in the front of the line or the back of the line. It can be where it needs to be. So... The physical reflexes connect to different parts of the mind, so then the mind has those different possibilities. Whereas a habit would tend to come from almost the opposite, where a reflex, a potential, did not have the chance to flower. And so then we ended up programming something else to happen. And so then we need to let that unprogramming happen, that... seemingly being spaced out, while life does the unwiring so that that natural potential can flower. So as a metaphor also, so that's already can go quite deep, but as a metaphor, it was more like a metaphor for what Chögyam Trungpa called instinct of awake or for awake. So our potential to just without thinking about it, understanding it, knowing it, that something just dives right in to the right place for that moment, the most depth that could be, that then that natural depth has a chance to become available. And that could be as deep as we wish. So that's what I was meaning, I think. I think that I might have missed something in there, but that's the wide picture.
So it's quite the opposite of habitual tendencies, or
yeah,
or maybe what Ajay refers to as repetitive patterns.
Yeah. I often use the phrase that I like very much, habit energy. That's something that would replace for a while in a kind of lame way a natural potential that was not allowed, that got stuck. And then, of course, like when we get towards the instinct for awake side of things beyond the ego, that there's a way that all of the previous, if we want to say reflexes, all of the previous equipment can be used if needed. It's not like it's driving the car. Something else is driving the car. But we could go into fifth gear if we want. There is a fifth gear that could be used. And so there is a kind of way that by following not what is normal, which would be hardly even to get to mature ego, but certainly not to go past that. If we would not follow what is normal, but what is deeply natural, then we do come to a place that, of course, is more slippery, subtle, powerful than the biology. But it's not that it's against biology or doesn't use the biology.
So another thing, you use the term personality sort of in passing, and I think the reference was something to do with how people present themselves. You didn't talk very much about that. So are you using this term personality in the same way that Ajay uses the term persona?
I don't know. I hardly get to come to his class, so what is he using persona these days to mean?
As I understand it, well, he contrasted that with coming from a place of authenticity.
Right.
So persona is, one's persona is how we wish to be viewed by others.
Right.
It's something constructed and image.
Mm. So what I meant by personality is that, and also all of the stuff that we wouldn't like to be viewed as, but that we do put on show, that is part of our show. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that part of that personality arena is how when people might see themselves in video or hear the voice recorded, we would be like, ooh, oh my God. But it's part of the defenses, it's part of the show, but it's not what we're purposely showing. It's what, because of what we're trying to show, it's what has to show the other side of that.
Yeah, I mentioned that because to me, there's a difference between personality and persona.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Everybody has a personality. It's simply the answer to the question, what is so-and-so like? For example, if someone who's never met Ajay before asks me, what is Ajay like? And I would say, well, he's a very, very shanti, very loving, very kind person. It's just his personality.
Okay. And how is that not the qualities in that case?
Okay, that's another term then.
So I was talking about qualities as something more genuine.
Right.
than what I was calling at that point personality. And we also all have qualities.
Right.
And maybe what you described of a J is more in the qualities field than in the personality field.
Okay. So you're referring to something more external and superficial when you say personality?
We could say that. I would hesitate to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's just maybe that different equipment that hasn't quite shed the husk of the seed,
right,
to show the qualities more.
Yeah. No, I'm not just dabbling in semantics here. You know, the thing is, I want to be clear for myself what we mean when we say persona or personality. Because I believe Christopher once said that when a person is awakened, it doesn't mean that the personality is gone. The personality is still there.
Okay.
So
this is, again, maybe another use of the word.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that every single person is going to use those words in exactly the same way. Will lead to confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was saying was that no matter what kind of equipment we're using, whether limited or more diverse, we're not trying to go towards a way that we're all the same. There's a way that even when we experience non-separation, we can feel the qualities, we can feel the richness in each person, or in each rock, in each thing. So then, does the rock have a personality? I don't know. Is that, are those qualities that we can feel? Yes. So, but especially when Buddhism has a lot, and not only Buddhism, but within Buddhism, many different schools that will talk especially about the word personality. Yeah. So how does that land in you today? What makes it important today?
What makes it important is knowing what is shed or what needs to be shed on the road to awakening. So the persona, most of the external layers, has of how we construct ourselves, how we wish to be viewed by others. As opposed to a place of authenticity.
Good. So the whole wish to be viewed by others,
mm-hmm,
drops away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the trusting the experiencing of not believing in the defenses, the false boundaries. When the trust is not just landing, but like really rooting in that experiential realm. And not, how is it going to look? How does it look? Like that whole heavily used habit energy apparatus gets remade into something else. And we can feel like what a relief that is when we experience it, and will be when that's fully ours. because that kind of involves not just the relief of not carrying the heavy armor, not just the relief that there's not an other out there that might get me, not just the putting down the kind of mirror and all the energy that's going into that side mirror. But like really trusting that we can feel right now what is the little bit of authenticity we could feel, or the lot of authenticity we can feel. And we can actually know this is trustworthy. And this grows in a different way from how the other thing grows, building up, accumulating, habit, energy, style. And when it grows, like that kind of deeply natural growth of reflex. So it's really beautiful that you bring up that chance, like that we could stop planning how our awakening will be, like people plan their wedding kind of. And just stay with that really bright seed, that really. So there's a nice poem by Rumi that came along today. How is it to be free of how? Loose in howlessness. This suggestion, wash before going to the water tank. The waters there have grace enough to clean and give you peace. But wash yourself of hows before you go. Wash off all wonderings why and workings out, however. Don't take those with you to the big water tank. So we, like when we plan the wedding with the universe, whatever, I think then we kind of put off that. I'm going to the big water, I'll wash there. But it's like, wash it off now. Because we're going to the big water. not put it off now, because we're going there. So thank you, that's cool. Was you, Florian? Did you want to say something or add something?
When you ask, I think just, is that personality or identity exist? So I would like to ask the question.
Does personality or identity exist? What's your experience?
There is one more of the question up here.
Sorry?
There is one more of the question up here.
There's one moment the question appears.
One mouth.
One mouth.
The question happened.
The question happened.
For identity and for personality. Just, what is that? So I read some books, but it's not so clear.
Yeah. Is it clear to you what you tend to identify with?
Tend to
identify with.
No.
So this would be interesting.
They said unform. Unform.
Unform.
Form.
Formless.
Formless.
They said. Who? The books. The books said to identify with formlessness? Mm. Or? I didn't follow that. The question of, is there a personality? And then the answer that you read was unformed? Mm. And which kind of books?
Vijayananda, like it was the book that it's like that, and other books it was like psychologists, so just
yeah,
like that thing.
So let's go with identity, that word. There's someone named Joanna Macy who loves nature and the planet and the animals and the plants and people. And she did study a lot of Buddhism and science. And she talks about both through loving nature and through her meditation practice, that she talks about the identity getting bigger, starting to identify with more. And so she calls it the greening of the self. She has a book called The Greening of the Self, where we could, like it's part of our, one of our options, that we could study and practice towards actual experiencing that I is not located only in here, but I am like either this ecosystem or the planet. And then when I am deciding what to do or not to do, my decision is informed by myself and what is good for me. So the whole thinking is wider. I think of what is, if I try to decide what is good for me, I have to give a little bit more power to my questioning, to get out of the habit energy and to know what is good for me. And in a way, it's very easy to do. But who wants to? We don't actually trust that I know what is good for me. And what is good for me, what is really good for me, for all of this, that I do know. I might know it in my cells, I might know it by my intuition, I might know it from out of nowhere. I do know, and it's not always what people would think is good for me.
And out cut with this conception of the others inside, connecting with ego, and dilemma, because other is part of of the things, so
yes.
That's very hard.
It's not so hard. It gets sticky when we try to figure out how, but if we just do it, it's like instead of relating to my idea of the others and my idea of their ideas, if I love myself, if I feel how life loves myself, then I can easily feel the difference. Maybe just for a half second, and then it takes over again, the habit energy, but I can easily feel the difference of what is good for me with my arms spread wide. And what did they tell me is supposed to be good for me? I remember one of those magical Indian moments that I had with, there's a family that are friends of Ajay's family, and they also happen to have a jewelry shop. And every time we would go visit them, there would be maybe some poor women going in and selling their sort of silver bracelet, that's what they got when they were married, to get some money to survive. This kind of like, whoa, scary business. But they're friends, so it's kind of, wow, okay. And I went to get something fixed just before we came here. And the two sons were there, the father and mother were not there. So we could have a different kind of conversation. And they said, you've been living here for a long time. Like, why? What do you like better, India, Spain, America? You know, this kind of question. And I said, I feel more at home in India. And they said, why? What is it? Well, they're, you know, at the same time, why, but very proud. This is a beautiful thing in India. They do have the, like, colonized people looking up at the West, and they do have this great, I find beautiful pride in their culture also. So why India? And it was just one of those times that we could actually talk. And first I started saying how in the West people don't have time for people. We don't have time for each other. And then we started talking about how India is going that direction, going towards not having time for people. And they said, so what should we do? I said, if we could just really feel what is really good for me, not even trying to feel what is good for the green me, you know, but actually what is good for me. And we got into this dynamic conversation where I could feel like I'm talking to like a banker and a jeweler who is inheriting his parents' business in banking and jewelry. And we're actually saying that it's not about getting more money for me, and that if I put my energy into that, I'm not putting my energy into what's really nourishing me. I'm not really doing what's good for me. And I know it. And they were saying it. It's not that that conversation doesn't happen in the West, but it did have this nice Indian opening, like an opening in time. And yeah. So the leap would then be like, I know what's good for me. I feel how I am included in the green me. And then from there, I think it is really easy to start to just take off from needing to identify with anything or to know what I'm identifying with. If we like, we could say identifying with something limitless or unknown, or like being in the embrace of. And again, like with Kailash's beautiful question, is personality allowed in that embrace? Does personality pop up from time to time on the way to non-personality that looks like personality from the outside? And can we know that we'll know when we get there? Is there another question?
Sorry.
Okay, we got two, and Virginie was a split second before.
You said just before, at Lauren's room, you said something beyond biology.
Beyond biology.
Can you repeat her question?
I sure will. She said, earlier I said something about something that's beyond biology, and what do I mean? So maybe a simple way to talk about it is, for me, and I just wonder how it is for you, when we hear like a biological description of life, so how the cell works or how the baby grows up or how we die or what a bone is or whatever, like these descriptions and more detail. Does it seem like that, does that take away the mystery?
No. Okay, so you're talking about the physical, the matter part of the life.
Okay, yeah. So she said, so you're talking about the physical, the matter part of life. And I said, okay.
So you mean beyond biology would mean the rest of it?
Like, what is it that, okay, the bone, that's really cool that it grows in a spiral. That's cool. But does that then make my mind go blank in a different way? Like, oh, okay, I know the bone. Or does that make me go, whoa, why a spiral? Well, why? Because it's more resistant. And it, are we going to accept the kind of purely functional explanation? And even the purely functional explanation, isn't that amazing? And then what is it that, okay, what's the difference when the bone is living and not living? Another simple way, quite kind of way to just question and see what comes out of nowhere, like, if we talk about life that includes life and death, if we feel inside, in our experience just now, what do we feel other than the physical workings? Which doesn't mean the physical workings are not incredible, but other than that, just now, what does anyone feel? And we have other people through thousands of years who have gone into this and have felt some really specific things that are also not the ultimate, but that more and more point towards something wider and wider. So there's like there's five bodies in one of the Hindu systems. So there's the food body, and then there's the prana body. And sometimes we might just be able to feel, as a simple thing, like we could feel our knee. We might be able to feel something that's not just inside the skin, that's just around the skin as well as in the skin, that's actually breathing. And that the physical breath is part of that, but not all of it. And that's our own experience. So it's another way of, instead of greening, it would be like dissolving. Yeah. Lineage.
I'm not sure, I don't think you answered it, but maybe you did. When you know what is good for you, when I know what is good for me and I don't do it, what's going on? No. Sometimes I think mm-hmm. the way I phrase.
No, that is really beautiful. Very clear. And so loving. So loving and lovable. I think that people are laughing because everyone can relate to your question. It's not that they're laughing at you or at the phrasing. It's just like so close to home. When I don't do, when I know what's good for me and I don't do it, what's going on? Okay, so good. This we can, so partly one easy answer is habit energy. But also we can bring in like, okay, what about that area of biology that when it is run by habit energies and not by freedom, can make us eat more than we need to or have sex when we don't need to or whatever, those kind of biological drives. And so if we could like open up those areas of that relate to our survival. Feel the animalness that we are, like how much of us is just animal. And feel at ease with that and let some light and air in so that our deeper knowing of what is good for me and our out of the blue knowing of what is good, what is appropriate now, can drive instead of the biology driving. So, why is there habit energy? We could go on. We could just say there's habit energy and that's right where we need to practice. When I see those places that I don't do what I know is good for me.
Okay, I see. So that's habit energy. So how do you deal with that? I mean, you said something like a practice or something, habit energy or...
Where that's happening, where I don't do what I know is good for me,
mm-hmm.
that's my field that I need to go into
mm-hmm.
for healing.
And just really look at that?
No, it's more like bringing a skillful touch, and in other words, bringing love. If we just imagine like, okay, a field that's gotten all the trees cut down. And so it's not able to respond without some help to what's really good for it. All the soil is washing away, all the animals gone. The kind of natural taking care of itself by itself can't happen. So we need to know what are those areas and find our ways to bring the caring, skillful touch.
And you mean what the thing that we're doing that we don't want to do hurts us, damages us?
It's showing that there, we could say, showing that this is where there has been damage. And because it has been damaged, because it's not able to flow with...
What has been damaged?
Sorry, just there was a vibration of the table. I thought, is there actually someone that's been doing that? Okay. We could always go back to Mike Tyson. there's some way that he can't do something. And he needs in his job he needs to do that. And by just trying to make himself do it, it's not happening. So that's just a symptom that there's been some clear cutting somewhere. Someone has cut down some trees. Could be hurt, could be neglect, could be so many. Could be too much attention, too little attention. The cool thing, before you start doing that, the cool thing is that we don't need to figure out who cut it down, why they cut it down, when they cut it down. We may never know. But if we just see like what's not naturally following through, what's not responding when I feel this is good for me, but then the arm doesn't move, we could see there is somewhere that was not allowed to flower, and so some kind of wall is going to be there that we can't feel, we can't move, we can't hear. So Bonnie talked about the lack of cellular absorption. There's a planet in the sky, but we don't see it. Or we see it and we don't notice that we don't even know that it doesn't have a name. It's the 10th planet. And oh. Love is coming and it's not. We're not recognizing the love and saying, kind words are coming and we take it as something harsh. Attention of any kind comes and we take it in always a certain way. Then just bringing love to the place can be enough, that dissolves, and that firmness that was holding itself up can become firm foundation.
But now, would you be bringing the love to the behavior? You wouldn't do that, would you? Wouldn't you bring
Sometimes we have to, because we can't help it. But of course, if we can get in deeper, of course we will. If we can get to the place that feels like we can get to a place inside that feels like no demand, we could just be there and the love will flow where it needs to go. No demand doesn't mean not asking, not receiving help or whatever, but not demanding. If we can come to a place inside that feels like already enough, but not finished and closed, but enough. Good. If we don't, then we could feel the place that feels not enough, that will be the thing that's giving the energy to the blind spot. Got it? So then we can either be with the place that thinks not enough, not enough, not enough. And just being there will be give enough ventilation that life and love come in. And it falls apart. We see it's not true. Or we could give love.
So you're loving the thing that...
Life is loving the thing.
What?
Life is loving the thing.
Is loving everything?
Life is loving the thing that you were saying.
Okay, yeah. Life is loving the thing that was the deficit that created the need for the thing that we don't mind.
Yeah. But what then happens is, so there is acknowledging, like, there is a deficit. Mm-hmm. There is a place that wants to soak up the love. And we can feel that when we don't believe in the not enoughness. We don't believe that that's our core, what we really are. We can feel somewhere enoughness is available. So it's kind of, there's two things together. One is acknowledging that there is a feeling of need, but not letting it become like a forceful neediness that's demanding. Demanding you to be perfect, demanding life to be perfect, or whatever. Demanding according to ideas. But, okay, but yet there is a deficit in the sense of needing love here. And then how that will let the forest come back. We don't have to know the whole thing in advance. We just need to tune into now. When I'm tuning into how am I going to do it, oh my God, then we're tuning into the, as if the deficit, as if the not enoughness is the center of my life. We're identifying with lack. And somewhere we know that that's not true. So then we're also identifying with lack and closing one eye, one ear, like we're kind of... But we fear that if we don't push, we're not going to get enough. Of the stuff, whatever it is, that symbolizes enoughness. It's whether it's someone's attention or whether it's money, etc. Clear enough?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I feel like you sort of just answered this, but how do you deal with this idea that there's not enough, this idea of lack? I mean, you can know that it's not true, but like, how do you send that?
Yeah.
Knowing.
Yeah. Good. So I think it's important to feel whether that idea that there's not enough is only an idea. It trades in ideas. When we connect to that place that thinks there's not enough, I'm not enough, life's not enough, I'm not going to get enough. When we tune into that, then it wants to go for the ideas of what will make me feel enough, or what will make me be enough, or what will make me for sure have enough forever, etc. But itself as an experience, I don't think it's just an idea. So then, what is it?
A feeling.
Mm-hmm. And how could we be with a feeling without letting it take over?
Love it. Show attention. Actually, that's sort of my question. I mean...
I know. So we're going through. we're walking through. So does that feel clear to you? Like, love it. You didn't say it with confidence.
Well, I mean, it does feel clear, but there's something about
it. So there's a way of being in it? So it would be like, if there's a place that got clear cut, all the trees were gone, and we start to notice that when we... We start to notice that it's a blind spot, it's like a painful place. We start to feel it's painful, it's not responding to the rain, what's going on, we're bringing you rain, where are the trees, there's no soil, etc. We start to notice what's happening. But it would be almost like as if someone inside of us says, like, until we figure out who did this, we're not going to let any trees grow. And we can't let anyone know that this happened because we're supposed to be a forest. And this is not just embarrassing, like if this would become a news story,
right.
Someone clear cut in my Amazon. It's like our whole honor, like our whole. And so because of the shame, we don't let ourselves go there and just act.
Okay, what's the action?
Go there, so.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry, but listen. How is it to be free of how, loose in howlessness? Wash yourself of hows before you go. Wash off all the wonderings why and workings out, however. Don't take those with you to the big water tank. So if I go thinking, but still, I'm going to, once I get there, I'm going to know who did it, and I'm going to write the letter to them, and I'm going to know how I'm going to do it. Like, we just go there. And we trust life to act when it sees the bare clay.
So you're telling me I'm not the stumps. Standing right there looking at it, not knowing.
I'm saying that we don't dare to go there because we are ashamed. We relate to it as something that is wrong with us instead of a place, our tender spot that needs someone to go there. Someone who cares to go there and start doing something without knowing in advance what. It's not you, it's we.
What difference does that make?
Big difference. If it's only me who hasn't gone there, then I'm even more ashamed. It's much more shameful. If this is something we all daily do, and we're all struggling to try to find a way to be kind enough to be allowed in, and that we all sometimes are in there, and sometimes we feel the wonder of that raw, tender, shaky.
But we have to go there by ourselves.
Yes and no. We can't go by ourselves. We have to go by ourselves. If we could go by ourselves, we would have gone before we came to India. When we think about how before, and the wonderings why, and the workings out, however, we're still in that, like, watching how I'm doing, and we'll never be able to be in. Another way to say is we're being driven by the fear that I'm not enough, the fear that the lack is true. And so whatever we do is going to be lack. Wherever we go, whatever we find will be that. Never enough. And so it's like really the root of our practice is falling back in, whatever, to even if I'm not enough, I'm enough. It is enough. I don't have to be enough. And it really goes like interlocked fingers with not knowing how. Not armed with the plan of attack.
Okay. When you came in here this today, in the beginning of the talk, you were saying like there's something in the room. Can you just, I'm just curious about what you meant by that.
Okay. Yeah, I said that it felt so amazing. I was not sure that talking would be so good, but it still feels amazing to me.
In what way?
Yeah, I tried to say. Thank you for asking. I guess one thing I feel is that togetherness, like that we've accepted somehow among us as specific individuals in a specific group, not just like abstract, but that we are together in this and that we are meeting in deeper places than we know all the time these days. And that it's okay, like it seems like, wow, not only am I surviving this, but something else, something more, not just the biology, but something more. I felt and feel a deep softness, all around and through us. And it's a specific kind of softness that I feel today. That feels kind of fluffy. As if like, if we have a tangled ball of cotton and then like kind of, it's been gently opened out. And what that feels like is that it gives, it's not just that it gives softness and okay, we can be ourselves, and but that it gives a specific quality that can come right through all the layers of our experience, whatever is prominent, whatever is coming to the fore. That a kind of giving spaciousness, like from the atmosphere that we've created by being together, it feels to me like this today, that something is given to us that comes right through whatever we might be consciously into. So Leah G was talking about feeling spaced out. So that would be one kind of way that that could show that the mind is a little fuzzy while something else is getting enough space to find its place in harmony. It feels like more accessible, a kind of patience, but not stopping, like a kind of slow continuity. It's almost like the softness is secondary when we, even though we talk about, okay, let's try to bring softness, bring softness to the emotion, bring softness to the mind, bring softness. But it feels like that's just a side effect of being in that deep together. And it's more that the spaciousness that can come in. It's not that we would necessarily be aware of this or watch how it happens in our experience. But sometimes it's nice to know what I sense is happening on a retreat, especially now we're towards the middle, so we're in. If we imagine like people who would live in monasteries for a long time and they're in their space, and someone who comes from outside could really appreciate the beauty of that, the bells and the rhythm. And even within the sameness, even more feeling the uniqueness of each person, but quietly. And then it does feel like depth, like it feels like the softness is not just a spaced out thinking brain, but kind of blurring the edges so that what we're used to being aware of is not all that we're, that's not the only thing that's coming. And one other quality that I feel is kind of a kind of way that as if we've all said yes, and now we've entered. And there might be a way that that could feel uncomfortable sometimes, because we can't go back now. And we're just enter, like the baby's got the head in the canal, we can't go back, can't do cesarean, you gotta go through. So it's kind of like, there's a feeling of like a kind of stillness and a kind of sacred moment because of our willingness that's been poured in over these days. Not only the days, like it's our whole lifetimes, but coming in this way, I feel. So when I was saying about not just fluffy, it's not just spacious, it's kind of gives enough space between the fibers of our being that a wise power can move around. That's the thing. Might be subtly, might be unexpectedly, might be as joy, might be feel like burning. So it's like we've given ourselves to be made use of by wisdom. Okay, so. I'll just read the one thing from Tibetan Buddhism called the Four Faults, just to end. The Four Faults. The first fault, means like a, if there's a crystal and it has a crack in it, or a little speck, it's not totally clear, it's not what we would call perfect. And it's talking about the four faults of the nature of mind. And it can make us smile. It's not a, don't worry. The first fault is that the nature of mind is too close to be recognized. I was thinking of talking about fault lines, like on the planet where there's the plates and the gap between the plates, and things happen there, especially this year. So it's a break in the Earth's underlying surface where movement, shift, release, volcanoes, mountains, valleys can happen. And it's kind of like a place where there, we could say like those places that Lenny was talking about, where we know what's good for us and it doesn't, we don't do it. But it's also a place that we have access to the depth. So the first fault of the nature of mind is that the nature of mind is too close to be recognized. The second fault is that it's too deep, that we can't feel how deep it is. If we could have a sense of how deep it was, we would already be kind of realizing that nature. The third fault is that it's too easy. It's too easy to see the nature of mind, so we don't see it. And the fourth one, horrible. It's too wonderful. The nature of mind is too wonderful. We don't accept. It's too close, too deep, too easy, and too wonderful. So thank you for listening. Thank you for questioning. Thank you for giving yourselves.